and gentlemen, to the greatest podcast on Earth! Step right up and experience the magnificence that is the Two Ring Circus Podcast! You'll gasp! You'll laugh! And you'll be amazed at what comes next.
Amazing.
Don't worry about the smell. It's just the stars of our show, Tom Italiano.
Hello.
And Matt Bradshaw.
Why such a long pause?
Welcome!
Big cat.
Such long pause. Good.
Do you know something that I've always done ever since I was a younger person? So not always, clearly, but... I've done it for many years, is whenever I sit down on a couch and there's a cushion, mm-hmm. I always cuddle the cushion.
Mm. Do you know, in the last 3 or 4 months, I have taken to cuddling my pillow in bed.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I never used to, but most nights now.
Do you have a shoulder dislocation issue like I do, which you can fall back on that story as a legitimate reason for doing it?
No. No.
So, you know, I dislocated this shoulder 13, 14 years ago. So Liz, being the osteopathic student at the time, said, you know, if you sleep on your side and you cuddle a pillow like this, it keeps your shoulder there so it doesn't, because it was popping out overnight. And it was very painful. So I did that. And then
I
it
had
just
that
became
problem with my sleeping shorts.
Popping out overnight?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I just do what I do, just don't wear anything to bed.
So this is something new as well. I've started wearing boxers to bed.
Wow. Don't wear... Why would you wear a box for? No. Check it out. Amazing. Reckon that's your fault?
Amazing.
No cricket joke.
Come on.
So it didn't take too long for the pillow to be referred to as that slut. Oh,
it's not bad.
Here you go. Here's your slut. I watched your slut case.
Oh,
that's what it was.
Jesus.
Because it was a bit like, you know, it was funny. I don't have a, just so you know, I don't have a specific wardrobe for my cuddle pillow. It's just any random pillow.
Okay.
Yeah. You watching your cat groom itself?
Yes.
Yeah.
God, I love when she does her paws. It's my favourite.
I love Sprocket sits down and he does, he's got one paw like does this.
Yeah, yeah. He does. Yeah. He's got that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Is that his ankle?
I guess it probably is. That's be his wrist.
It would be his wrist.
Because even though he's got four legs, really, at the front, it's wrist.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they have the back.
Because when they're walking along, they're a four-legged animal.
Yeah.
But when they sit up, that's your...
Because he's not holding that bone. He's not holding that bone like with his feet. He's holding it with his hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his wrist.
That's good. Okay.
How's your week?
All right.
Yeah, nine gigs.
Got through Easter.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. I had 10, but then you cancelled one, so now I've got 9.
Hey?
Oh, fuck you.
Hey, what's going on? Where are you going? Matt's boycotting. He's man-cotting this part of the podcast. Oh, what's this?
It's Easter.
Oh, my God, you know me so well. They're the greatest things that have ever been invented. Look, they're even presented like they're a bomb of joy.
Oh, I think it's supposed to be an egg.
What's the difference?
What? Between an egg and a bomb of joy?
You ever dropped an egg on the floor? It's like a bomb.
Not of joy.
No, not an egg. Oh, that's a bomb of joy.
All right,
Yeah. When an egg explodes all over the place, it's like...
And no one's there to hear it.
Yeah, it still goes... Thank you. That's the best. Do you want one?
No.
Do I have to wait till next Easter? Story? One story? My brother and I used to give my grandmother chocolates for Christmas and Easter and then work out how long it would take for us to get them back.
Oh.
Or, you know, whether or not we would get the same thing we gave her or someone else would get it. Yeah.
Well, if it's true of this...
Mm.
Oh, best before, seaside. Or the A side should be beside the seaside.
I think there should be, I think labels like that, the best before, you should be able to say, all right, best before this date, still fucking great afterwards.
I think
it's not used by, it's best before.
I seem to recall as a common occurrence with Easter things that the best before date is miraculously just before Easter the next year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you can't.
So.
Re-gift.
Per serving, which is one.
Yes.
There are 308 kilojoules.
Hmm.
So what's that by 61?
Jesus Christ.
That's the most I've eaten in one sitting.
What?
Yeah. Because you can buy the box of 30. And they do them for $11 every now and then at Safeway or Coles.
Okay. Explain the rest of this, though.
So you
bought two boxes.
I had one left over.
From somewhere from else.
I had one left over from the day before where I ate a box the day before. So in 24 hours, I ate 90 of these, which is...
Fucking kidding.
That's 27,000 kilojoules. No, it can't be.
Yeah, it can be.
Oh, it is. It actually is. 90 of them is... 27,000 kilojoules. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so in that one sitting, it's 18,000 kilojoules I ate in one day.
Alive.
Yeah.
I'm going to go away again now. I'm not getting you more presents, though.
Have you got a 30 pack for me?
No.
I love them. My sister, you know what my sister calls these? My sister calls these Ferrero No Shares.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, no. Look, they're open. Uh-huh. Oh, no.
So...
I'm not going to eat one now. That's rude.
I told the story when I was out with friends the other night.
Hang on. You're not on speaker.
Oh, I told the friends that I was out the other night that I ate one of these. I had a double caramel ego magnum. I never buy myself ice creams and stuff.
It's hard work.
That's all right. No,
it'd be the boom operator.
No, it's condenser. It's really... It picks me up from everywhere. Yeah, so that this is four of those.
Right.
Yeah.
So how many of those have you eaten in one sitting?
One, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm a fucking lightweight.
Jeez, you're nothing.
I was talking about this. I bought two of them.
Oh, good man. I was talking about this with my coffee shop person today. My drive-through coffee shop place. And they're doing these little granola bar things.
Mm?
Granola bars.
Mm?
Granola bars.
Mm.
Again?
No, I genuinely didn't hear the first two times.
So they sell these.
You said gorilla bars, and I knew that wasn't right.
No.
And then I thought you said
monkey bars?
Granola. Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. So I went through this morning and got a coffee and a granola bar, and then I left to come here and went, I'll go again. And, she said, another coffee? I said, yes. And she said, another granola bar? I said, yeah, why not? You know, when you're on a binge, just go for it. And then we had a discussion about that. I said, I have a theory on that. She's like, do you? I said, yes. And then I was silent.
She doesn't know you well enough to say,
No. Of course you do. No, and then I was silent. And she said, are you going to tell me the theory? I said, well, I wasn't just going to blurt it at you. I was going to wait to see if you wanted to hear it. And then she said... Well, you'd be our first customer that does that. and it's that theory of, you know, sugar and carbs, and us white people, most of us, we're, you know, we hail from Northern Europe where they have winter half the year, and so, which means for 1 week a year you get strawberries and you gorge yourself on strawberries for 2 days straight and then you don't eat them for 360 odd days. So it's okay. So your brain's wired to go binge, because you're not going to have this again for ages.
Hmm.
Binge. No worries. Except now we have eternal summer and you can have granola bars all day, every day.
Hmm.
But your brain is still set up to go, eat that stuff. Eat it. That's why when I have a bag of chips, I don't stop at one.
Yeah, right.
Because my genetic history calling to me saying, you gotta just go for it. You're not going to eat this again for another year. Except it doesn't know. It doesn't know that I can have 60 Ferrero shares tomorrow as well.
It's fucking wild.
Yeah.
I have a bad food habit of, if I haven't eaten very much during the day, I reward myself on the way home from a gig with something terrible.
You reward... What?
I reward myself.
You reward yourself for not eating?
By eating something shitty. Like if I...
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, I think to myself, well, I only had like 3,000 kilojoules today. I'm allowed 7,000.
Yeah, but 3,000 kilojoules of beer.
I don't... And, and here's the other thing.
You don't count that?
I don't count the beer.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So...
I
okay.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah. I know it's ridiculous.
No, it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing as just going...
It is not.
Yeah.
How dare you? You are worse than me. That's the point of this.
Okay, it's the same thing, however I take it further. Which is unlike me, to take something further.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I only had...
Speaking of fathers, do you have a question for me? What's on your iPad? Asterisk.
Oh, that was in relation to last week's episode.
Right, what was the question?
I just wrote myself a note that said, girls marry their fathers. Discuss.
Did you ask the first working title of Girls Just Want to Have Fun? And they went, girls just want to marry their father. It doesn't work. Fun? Yeah, girls just want to have fun works. Yeah. I often think of what must have been the first draft of the lyrics of a great song.
I thought that when you said Eternal Summer the other day. Daryl Braithwaite didn't know what he was talking about.
Eternal Summer.
Was that it?
Yeah.
Did you just want me to say that so you could get to that gag?
No. Oh. No. I just wonder if it was a discussion point you still wanted to
investigate. No, it was only in relation to the idea that we repeat our mistakes and take the easiest path possible.
Oh, so like marrying our fathers?
Yeah.
Or our mothers?
Or boys marrying their mothers, absolutely.
Right. Is that a mistake? Is that... on what... tracky, do you see that as similar to the last topic?
I can't remember. It made sense when I
wrote the question down.
Yeah.
Shall I have a look?
Yeah, have a look.
Just I'm interested. See if it actually makes sense.
It is interesting. It's certainly interesting how often you find yourself attracted to... when you realise that you're attracted to elements of a personality that you can directly correlate to other people in your life. But I've never been attracted to anyone that's like my dad. I think that's because I'm like my dad. Oh, you mean... Well, okay. Well, I'm not a woman, so I'm not going to necessarily marry dad.
It's a boys and their mums, girls and their dads thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Because, boys apparently do it, because the mum has always been the one that's looked after them and done their washing and done their cleaning and done their cooking.
Yeah.
And then they naturally gravitate towards a life partner that kind of treats them the same way.
That's an interesting one. In the modern age, because there's really only been two generations where...
I agree.
Where that hasn't been just the norm anyway.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how things were for a very long time.
It's a little bit of ancient history. You'd like to think that things have moved on a little bit. But certainly only... I think the reason I wrote it was only in relation to the idea of us taking the easiest path.
Yeah, okay.
So we continue to do the thing that we already knew.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what it was about.
Must be interesting too, what that must be like from the other point of view of being, well, I just jumped back to chapter two in that sense of, do women marry their fathers? And if so, who do those men marry? Because they're not marrying their mothers, right? Are they marrying someone who's just said yes? That idea of the woman gets to pick their partner. Like the greatest threat to a man is rejection from a woman. Obviously, in that sense of reproductively, and that's how we perpetuate the species. So conventionally, that's how we do it. So that's really. That's an interesting other side of the story that doesn't get talked about so much.
Mm.
Yeah. It sounds to me like what happens is there's a needy party to every relationship.
Yes.
And someone in that scenario is more needy than the other, and in the other scenario where men marry their mothers, the boys are needy for a competent woman and the women are needy for a competent man.
Well, I, you could posit that in both those situations, both the boys and the girls, that the other partner is the one that is being the helper monkey in the relationship and trying to save the other person.
Yeah, true. That's interesting for two single men of our age to be talking about.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Go on, why?
Well, we don't have an experience with being married.
No, that's true.
Or being close, I guess.
Close to being married?
Yeah.
Have you never been close to being married?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. That's not saying that I haven't been close to that being the next step for me. But yeah, I've never had a partner who was anywhere near close.
Yeah, right.
So
I have. I've had a couple.
Yeah. So that point where like, all right, I'm ready to do this thing. And then that other person going, we're not even going to have that conversation.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been really close once and it would have been a mistake. She would have said yes. 100%.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. She's very happy now.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine. My mother, on the other hand, still devastated.
Yeah, I was like, well, I'm not allowed to have another girlfriend.
Oh, that's right.
Because you'll break up with her and then we all have to break up with her and it's very traumatic. I was like, well, all right, I'll look after you all by never getting involved with anyone again. Oh, no, don't, I didn't mean that. No, yes, don't worry.
It's what you said.
Yeah, don't worry. I know you didn't mean it. What's that scene from
Iron Man?
Spinal Tap.
Oh.
It's like, don't talk, just smile, honey.
No idea.
This is the Fran Drescher character.
I guess says it might
to,
be that.
Says to one of them, it's like, okay, just don't talk, just smile, honey. anything else we want to touch on?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, that's good.
Is there anything else that... I haven't been to the movies. I haven't got anything pop culture-ish to talk about.
No, I haven't seen anything either. I'm just going through.
Busy.
Yeah. Gigs.
Yeah. I mean, I was away the week before the last podcast. I was in Tassie for 4 days.
Yeah.
So I wasn't busy there. What did it feel like? I mean, I was busy, but what did it feel like?
Yeah. Does it feel like 4 days or did it feel like less or more?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Do you know what it did feel like was as I was driving from the airport into town, got a really profound sense of not loss but difference, because it was the first time I'd gone to Tasmania since my auntie died at the end of last year. Yeah. And that was the last time I went, was to, you know, carry her coffin and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of weird, because when you go back to the place you were born specifically to go and see family members, and there's less of them. It's a bit weird. And I don't remember it ever. I don't remember having that feeling before.
Yeah.
So that was kind of. What's the word I'm looking for? Not mournful. Not sobering. It was kind of something. Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely something.
Yeah. And not profound, but just it was kind of. Yeah. Something. Yeah. But no, Tassie was great. Had a ball. Caught up with a lot of people and ate a lot of cheese.
So no good. Goat's cheese. We've established that you don't eat goat's
fucking
cheese.
Goat's cheese. God, it's so horrible. Anyway, at the risk of treading on old ground. Rule number four?
Yeah.
Go on.
Compare yourself to who you were yesterday. not who someone else is today. Can I talk about cricket? I'm not going to, I promise. I'll promise now. What happens if some ingenious insight wafts down from the heavens and lands on my tongue and I've already promised I won't talk about it?
Well, you promised.
I know.
I'll do it.
Will you hold me to?
Your promise.
All right. Just checking. Yes. Yeah, this is a tough chapter.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Tough for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's mainly because it's long. Looks like 15 pages on the last one. There's less in there.
So, in a nutshell, my point in a nutshell.
Where is your in a nutshell? Tell you where mine is.
Yeah. You need to discover the vision you have for yourself and abide by it.
I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, chapter 5. this is a pretty full-on one for me because of how tangled up in my own web I've been in my life. And how the nature of being tangled up is like, how do you untangle?
Do you want to give an overview of the chapter?
Yeah.
As a basis for what, for you then talking about your own experiences.
Yeah, it's sort of talking about, I'll say what I'm thinking and then maybe you can help me do a better job of it. Because I feel like this is one that is quite hard for me to process. This is a challenging one for me, this chapter.
Okay.
So
it primarily talks about the inner critic.
Yeah. Yeah. So it pretty much says that we have a tendency to look at the world and compare ourselves to things that are unrealistic for us to compare ourselves to, and then criticize ourselves, and then go into ourselves and punish ourselves for not being all the things we think we should be, which in reality, when you're comparing yourself to things that are external to you, there will always be this great disparity that you have no control over. Sure. But if you compare yourself to yourself, then you've got much more power to do good for your life. Because that's really your reality is you, not the Australian cricket captain. That's a good point.
It is.
Yeah. And speaking of which, he talks about the idea of many good games, like, and so therefore judging your life on all of the things you do. So you might take one thing, like, for example, you know, am I a good singer? Well, if I compare myself to John Farnham as, you know, am I a good singer? Then all I will do is berate myself into how terrible I am at it, right? But if I look at myself as playing that game as well as what am I as a friend, as a brother, as a dog owner, you know, as a mortgage payer, you know, all the other games that I play, and am I good at some of them and average at others and poor at others, and therefore is that a much more representative assessment
yeah.
of whether I'm worthy of.
And then as a subset of that, or as part of being able to make those gradation judgments, that it's not about success or failure. It's not a binary thing.
Yeah.
It's not a one or a zero.
Yeah.
It's, of course, it's all the area of grey as to how good or bad
you and are at something and being able to make a...
Can I be any better? And by doing... Like, if you look at it, it's like, oh, well, you know, I either success or... I mean, either success or I fail, but if I'm down here, I can take one step up and I'm a little bit better today than I was yesterday, a little bit better. And if you keep doing that tiny little incremental assessment, which is exactly how you learn to play an instrument or mm-hmm. something like that, you know...
And that if we didn't... We wouldn't do anything if there wasn't some sort of impetus to do it better.
Yeah.
Like anything that can be done better or worse. So strive to be better at it within your own frame of reference, not in comparison to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there's lots in here that I just was listening to. And then as I've done, I've gone back and then read the chapter and just gone, oh, man.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. It's how should I say it? It's the negative side of the pendulum swing of spending a lot of time by yourself. Whereas when you do spend a lot of time by yourself, which has been a hallmark of my lifestyle since I was, you know, a young teenager of living in the country, then working in a projection room, or now living alone, is that, you know, you do... Oh, hi, cat. You do get to... I feel like it's like when my sister's two-year-old walks in and I'm like, I need to shut up now because the kid needs some attention. Like, what do you need? What do you need?
She does this to me when I'm working out the back.
Yeah.
Just all of a sudden pops in, starts shouting at me. She just sit down behind me until I play with her for 5 minutes and then she's okay.
Yeah.
She'll go away and sleep again for a couple of hours.
Yeah, he's putting his head on my knee.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know where I was at.
That's interruption. Oh,
Live by yourself. And so you often, you know, you've got, therefore got plenty of time to have those hypothetical conversations with whatever, with who or whatever it is you need to resolve something with. And you get the time to work it out. And
I wonder if that's something that is intrinsic to our friendship as well. Because we've had similar upbringings in that respect. Like, I mean, me, aside from the fact that I was an only child, moved around so much as a kid, moved to a country where English wasn't even their first language. So very much.
Well, I came to Australia when I was 10.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So very... I was thinking, yeah, you spoke Welsh.
That does not happen very often.
I was thinking about your language.
I remember being in Australia for like 24 hours and standing outside. The second day where it was like 40 degrees, I was standing outside in this like dust bowl of Werribee and this child from across the street comes out and goes, "Hey, kid!" And I didn't know what he was saying because I'd never... Like, as a 10-year-old in the UK, no one's a kid. No one said that in the 80s.
Yeah, right.
And no one said, "Hey." He'd be like, "Excuse me," that's what you would say.
Really?
To someone you didn't know. You'd say, "Excuse me," if you wanted their attention. Like, it was just this, like, "Hey, kid." And then, like, he swore. I don't know, he said, "Fuck." It was the first time I'd ever heard it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so there's like...
How old were you?
It was 10. It was like a foreign language. And he would have been 10 or 11 himself. Right. But I was terrified.
13 the first time I heard an adult say fuck and I cried.
It was
maybe I was 11.
Yeah, it's funny. Anyway, but there's a lot about our our story which is compatible.
And both still living alone now.
Well, not still. We've had our dalliances.
We have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah.
Oh, and we have.
Well, you've had more of those than I have.
How dare you, sir?
Well, you know, you're just more cultured than I am, that's all.
Move on.
You've experienced
a
more diverse range of cultures.
Move on. So that's an overview of the chapter.
Work. Thank
is
you.
Is that right?
Yeah. Can you drive this one? Because it's emotional for me.
Well, I think because it's emotional for you, I want to hear more about it.
Well, I do like the being beside the seaside. so I've got this, says, read this bit. I'll read it to you.
All right.
When the internal critic puts you down using such comparisons, here's how it operates. First, it selects a single arbitrary domain of comparison, fame, maybe, or power. Then it acts as if the domain is the only one that is relevant. Then it contrasts you unfavorably with the someone truly stellar within that domain. And it can take the final step even further, using an unbridgeable gap between you and its target of comparison as evidence for the fundamental injustice of life.
Mm.
That way, your motivation to do anything at all can be most effectively undermined. Those who accept such an approach to self-evaluation certainly can't be accused of making things too easy for themselves, but it's just as big a problem to make things too difficult. So I was like, oh yeah, I do that all the time. I think that goes back to just being a kid with a hair lip.
Yeah, okay.
Like, you know, not so much like the real, you know, the baby years of, you know, not, you know, having my hand in splints for months because I, you know, kids want to put things in their mouth, but you can't when you've got stitches in your face.
Hmm.
The first 12 months of my life, I had my arms in
the fuck.
Yeah. And like, I don't remember that, but I think that, I mean, obviously that's an issue.
Whoa, dude.
It was, you know, I didn't really get breastfed.
Mm.
You know, I did, but not a lot. I don't remember that either. But certainly, and as a young child, until I was, you know, maybe, until I was in my teens, when I had two really significant cosmetic operations, like, I did look, I looked way more like I was deformed than I'd maybe been in a car accident. Like,
right.
And also, yeah, I was, you know, I was born in the late 70s, so surgery,
yeah,
it was what it was.
No.
So there was a lot of questions of, you know, what's wrong with your face when you're a kid? Because that's how kids,
of course, that's
how,
yeah, kids, yeah, talk. Yeah, that's right.
And that, and then also being up until I came to Australia, like, the biggest talking point was my surname, because everyone in the UK is like, you know, Brown and Smith, you know, while it was in the late 70s, early 80s. Then I come to Australia, I go to a Catholic school, which was weird as well, but everyone's got an ethnic name of some kind. Like, I never met an Azit party before. And that was not lost on me what that sounded like. Like, well, this Azit party? That's the best. So, yeah, a lot of stuff about comparing yourself to someone, you know, comparing yourself to someone who doesn't have a hair lip. It's like,
yeah,
you know, all the time. And then still to this day, like, I see myself in the mirror and go, oh yeah, that's what you look like. You don't, like, it doesn't register to me that I'm not symmetrical. I'm reminded all the time.
Right.
So, which is that thing there going, take a single arbitrary domain of comparison. Symmetrical face.
Sure.
It's like, wow, yeah. And you, the interesting thing about that is, well, you're like automatically different. Like, there's nothing you can, like, and that's not even a personality thing. There's nothing I can actually do about it. I can have a lot more surgery if I want. Like, but at what point do you go, come on.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one.
Because
It does also fall into, like, okay, well, I like to sing. How does this work with, you know, it's a bit wacky. So it might be cool. It might be time to get a therapist again. And I'm only a little bit joking.
Yeah, well, yeah. I know. Probably important to remember that everyone has an inner critic. So the people that we are comparing ourselves to are also comparing themselves unfavorably to other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Brad Pitt's got an inner critic as well.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Kim Kardashian, even.
Yeah, I think the interesting for me about that kind of process is... I've always found it very difficult to consider, like, it talks about, you know, picking an arbitrary thing and that, well, that would usually be someone else. But I've never really processed it as, do I look at someone and be, and do I actually do that? And I feel like a lot of the things that I might have been down on myself about, I've been actually ideals. They've not been people. They've not been, like, I've kind of hold myself to an account of a standard that I feel like is out of my reach, and so I've,
sure,
yeah, but. So that's another aspect to this thing that I found confronting, because then I've tried to do that analysis of who do I ever compare myself to?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't even pinpoint that.
As a guitarist?
No, never.
Is that an easy, no?
Yeah. It's like,
have you ever been one of those guys?
I know what you're going to ask me. No.
No, me either.
Just make sure you want to quit.
Yeah.
Fuck, who says that? Just make sure I go home and practice, because isn't playing the guitar the best? I've never been like that, and I might jest in that thing when someone says, no, I don't even do it. Like, you know, I don't even say, oh, they're shit. Like, you know, I remember having, being year seven and getting on the school bus, right? And he said the first 3 months I lived, it was before we moved to the country, so I had to catch this bus to Geelong to go to school. And you're like, Motley Crue was a cool band, right? And I didn't know about them. Like, Poison was my band, right? Hmm. And so the other kids were like, oh, they're shit. And I was like, okay, well, I got ears. I know that that's not shit, right? And I'm listening to what you like and go, I know that's not shit. And I couldn't really understand that there was a, because I was 12, I can understand and say, I don't like that. It doesn't appeal to me. Yeah. But I still couldn't understand, even at 12 years old, why you would use that language. And it might just be a holdover from the fact that, I'd only been in the country for 2 years. Right? And that's not how I express myself. But even as an adult, I still don't. So when someone says, do you want to play Ed Sheeran? Do you know any Ed Sheeran? I was like, yeah, I know a few, but, it's like, isn't he amazing? I was like, yeah, he's good. Like, he's really good, but it's not my thing. I don't think he's as good as everyone says he is, but he's very good. And, but I'm not going to turn around and go, shit, because it's not my thing. I'm not a Foo Fighters fan, but
sorry,
they're not shit. Like, I wouldn't say that, but people do. And so I guess in and around that, what I'm saying is about the guitar players, like, I see people who play guitar, the guitar's out of tune, it's a crap instrument, they're not particularly good, and I learn something from watching them, not just that it's better to tune a guitar. I'm just always just happy to be in the presence of someone doing something like that. And sometimes I will go, kind of had enough of this guy shouting at me now, I'm going to leave. But I still don't go, this is shit. Yeah. What's that? Is there something outside your house?
Yes.
Oh.
There's a cat that's not mine. Go away from here, cat. It's not mine.
Out damn cat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I mean, yeah. I brought it back to guitar because I feel like that's probably the closest, the most likely thing that you would have that sort of comparison to.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. I think I remember being, I don't know, this could be part of why I am the way I am about this. Playing the guitar is hard for me. Like, it's not one of those activities that I took to, like, there was a gift in my body that just, like, it was hard learning how to play guitar. And had I not lived in the country as a kid and, like, had plenty of spare time and loved music, loved it, but if I hadn't had that the time and the inclination and the passion for it, I would have given up
early.
But it was the right time of my life too, where I was 12 and I didn't know how hard everything else was or how easy anything else was. So like I was 12, so everything was difficult. So like I was just like, well, you have to work to do anything. It was easier than chopping firewood, and therefore more enjoyable. You know, so I did it as a pastime, and like I said, the idea of play every rose has its thorn. Like, oh, I can do that, kind of. Oh, I'm getting better at that. Oh, that's great.
That's because it's shit.
But it was pretty obvious to me by the time I was 15 that like you just the more you work hard at something, you better you get at it. But there were also people that their fingers just could do things a lot more cleanly and easily than mine could.
Yeah, really.
With the same, like, you know, 1 hour's practice on that for you, or 1 hour's practice on that for you, and like Dom, you're about like 10% into it, and that person's finished. Like, that's just how playing guitar was for me.
Yeah, okay.
And it still is. Like, it's, you know, so the incredibly brilliant, dexterous, like, guitar players who can do stuff that I can't even comprehend, like, I get how they get like that, but it's not, it doesn't, I don't feel like my value's diminished, no pun intended, by the fact that that's, I get the difference between having a physiological capability that, you know, I'm probably closer to maxing out on than other people are.
Sure.
That's okay.
Yeah.
But I've never had an issue with that kind of stuff.
I don't think I have either. You might be able to cite examples where that is completely disproven. And maybe when I was younger, I did do that. But I don't.
Are we still talking musically?
No, I'm actually talking in general, just about life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think most of the things I covet are things that I want, not because I've seen other people have got them. I don't mean material things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's interesting. That's why I was surprised when you said this really resonated with you.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I was thinking about different issues.
Like, I had a huge drama when my brother got married before I did, and then he had a baby before I did. Like, and there wasn't a single part of that process where there was jealousy, but it was all just focus on my own incompetence.
Your younger brother.
Yeah. My brother is 6 years younger than me. It was like, hang on. I mean, and it's that thing that this says in here. So it's like, well, it even, there's that point is the guy that your workmate is better at you at work, but his wife's cheating on him and your marriage is successful. So, you know, who's actually got a better life?
Sure.
I mean, at that time, my brother clearly had a better life.
Yes, we're not suggesting for 1 minute that.
And so, yeah, there had been. I guess we have found some things where I do compare, but not. Yeah, so that inner critic, that inner assessment, has gone severely awry at many times in my life.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's brought about some pretty gruesome behaviours.
Oh, dear me.
No, gruesome's a bad word.
He does certainly, however, make mention of the fact that value judgments aren't worthless.
Oh, this is the Jordan Peterson, not my brother.
Yes. Yes. That comes back to if something can be done, then it can be done better.
Yeah.
Or worse.
But the thing, interesting point about the worse, sorry, do you want to?
Yeah, well, just that... I think the positive part of that particularly is that he also says that we shouldn't try to drown out those voices with positive affirmations.
Yeah.
That you actually should embrace the critic that says, I can do this better. Not the one that says, you're shit because you can't do it as well as
me. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you going to read something?
I don't know.
Dude.
I don't know. Maybe. So what it does, the chapter goes further into, it's like, so how do you, what is a good approach to sort of dealing with this? And it's having a, you have to do a pretty hefty self-analysis. And it's interesting, so he has this thing, the self-authoring program. Do you know about that?
No.
So him and a couple of other psychologists developed this program where it's really what this chapter is about. It's like doing an objective assessment of where you've been, where you are, and then there's a future authoring program that you can plan for the future. And this is definitely about doing that. All right, have a self-analysis of where you're at, and a way to move past this unrealistic external comparison trap is to be able to negotiate with yourself to make these, to take small steps to make changes. And I love this bit, this is kind of two-page bit where he sort of had a conversation with himself about how are you gonna, I'll just read it, I love it. You might have to negotiate further depending on your state of mind. Maybe you don't trust yourself. You think that you'll ask yourself for one thing and then having delivered, immediately demand more. And you'll be punitive and hurtful about it. And you'll denigrate what was already offered. Who wants to work for a tyrant like that? Not you. That's why you do what you want yourself to do. That's why you don't do what yourself did. Sorry, that's why you don't do what you want yourself to do. You're a bad employee, but a worse boss. Maybe you need to say to yourself, okay, I know we haven't gotten along very well in the past. I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to improve. I'll probably make some more mistakes along the way, but I'll try to listen if you object, and I'll try to learn. I noticed just now, today, that you were really jumping at the opportunity to help when I... You weren't really jumping at the opportunity to help when I asked. Is this something I could offer you for your cooperation? Maybe if you did the dishes, we could go out for coffee. You like espresso? How about an espresso? Maybe a double shot? Or is there something else you want? Then you could listen. Maybe you'll hear a voice. Maybe it's even the voice of a long-lost child. Maybe it will reply, really? You really want to do something nice for me? You'll really do it? It's not a trick. Like, and that idea of kind of going... And then it goes on to say, so when you do the dishes, go for the coffee. Go for the ice cream. Don't go, oh, no, I've done the dishes. Let's clean your room. Like, you've got to have that negotiation and back it up and look after yourself. And I loved it because I was like, oh, man, I do that all the time. I do it all the time with myself. And not only do I do it all the time as in, like, reward myself for the small thing, I also clean my room and then go, I don't know, I'll just do this other thing first. And I get in the way of myself trying to do the right thing. So that bit was just great. I went, oh, I do it all the time. It's like he knows me.
That's anathema to the concept of delayed gratification, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you do the dishes and you could have that reward that you promised yourself, that you negotiated with yourself for, but instead you go and clean your room because you think, you know what? Because then
I'm on a roll.
I'll have waited another hour.
Yeah.
And that box of 147 Ferrero Rochers will taste ever sweeter.
Let's not get into that. Let's not get into that. Yeah. So that was
it. I find that interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty full on.
Let me... So that essentially goes into kind of goal setting, which is a phrase, and I know that's not what he calls it, and it's a phrase I've used before in talking about this, I think maybe chapter two. This is a quote from him. We live within a framework that defines the present as eternally lacking and the future as eternally better.
But the interesting point about the goal setting is goal setting tends to get all of the focus and the accolade, right? But what this is more about is the assessment. It's kind of going, you really got to know where you're at. You've really got to do a harsh appraisal.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, then those other patterns will just keep repeating.
As in, you need to have a clear assessment of what your starting point is before you can possibly hope to attain the
because
goal.
A lot of what without the assessment, you've got you'll make a bunch. Well, without the assessment, you'll have all these goals, and they might not actually be representative of really where you want to be.
Yeah,
because you haven't worked out where you are.
Yeah.
So if you work out where you're at, you'll go, oh, okay, cool.
So that's a really interesting and natural extension, because the thing I suppose you're taught, if you're ever talking about goal setting, like if you ever say, this is the thing I want to achieve, and then you work backwards from there, that's how you're kind of taught to do things. So you look at the steps that you need until you get back to where you are. But you actually, then his point is that unless you actually have a clear assessment of who and where you are at this point, then you still can't necessarily achieve any of those steps to get to the goal. Mm. And then also, like you said, if you don't have a clear impression of who and what it is that you are, then perhaps that goal isn't it.
That's true. And it basically that you just kind of created a vision for me, like in the idea of steps to a higher point, right? You can't build that ladder by putting the top rung in first.
Mm.
Like you have to work out, where am I on the ground here? That's where I want to be.
Mm.
First rung, second rung. Yeah, that's how you build your path.
Well, you've talked on this podcast about building bridges before as well.
Burning like them, yes.
Building.
Yeah.
The necessary physicality of building a bridge is you start from this point and you build on the thing until you get to the other side. You don't start from the middle.
Well, I guess the way I would see a bridge is different to that, because a bridge has to be built from both sides.
Sure.
And I know that's usually a metaphor for building a bridge, like it's a relationship. But in order to build a bridge, you can't just start there. But in order for a trajectory, like it has to start at...
No, you're right. I might have confused it. I guess I was thinking of the goal as being the middle as distinct from the other side.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
So I also wrote,
good.
The future is like the past,
nice.
But the past is fixed. And the future is hope and potential positive change.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit of a challenge, this one, because it kind of highlights that, I mean, certainly, once you've lived for long enough, you have a history that it's that kind of thing of gamblers do it all the time, and they kind of go, oh well, we look at what's come, the last 150 games, this has happened, and when it gets to this point. So the likelihood of this happening like this is like, it's not a predictor of what's going to happen next.
Yeah, of course.
Yet we live our lives like it is. So when you compare yourself to yourself and compare yourself to your past self, which is what we usually do, you kind of go, well, this is what I always do. And you hear people say that. So like, oh, I always do this. Oh, I'm just one of those people that does this. I'm one of those people that does that.
Mm.
You know? And you go, okay, well, you don't have to be.
Mm.
Like, just because you have until that point. Just when you feel like shit, you eat 60 Ferrero shares. It doesn't mean when you feel like shit next time you have to eat any. Right? And part of the reason why you feel shit is because you've eaten so many Ferrero shares so many times. Like, you know, like, you feel guilty about that. Like,
yeah.
So it's
so I'm reading this book chapter by chapter.
Yeah.
What?
I know.
You mean like a book?
I'm reading it word by word. I don't know how you read a whole chapter at once. It's amazing. What are you, Johnny Five Comes Alive?
So I don't know what the next eight steps are.
I know what the next one is, but I don't know what.
So I don't know if at any point we'll get to the place where I find something that really resonates with me and therefore affects me, the way this one obviously did. Like my issues with, I don't know whether we'll get to a point within the framework of this book where we'll discuss where I see I'm at in my life.
Right.
This could kind of tie into it, but I'm choosing not to do it. Yeah.
Is that in response to me going, oh, this one's awkward for me? Or are you just saying, like, because you don't know what's coming?
No, there are things that I feel like it's the sort of book that would address the issues that I've had in my life with who I am.
Right.
And this touches on it, absolutely, yeah. But mine's very much intrinsic rather than looking at comparing myself with other people. It's
yeah.
So,
I don't feel much about like comparing with other people, though. Obviously, I could probably talk for a long time about how I have been in the past, and clearly, like things like my brother getting married before me was had a negative effect. But certainly, I do have the benefit of being how old I am now and going through what I've gone through to hear this stuff and go, yeah, gee, that's 8 years too late. Or, but back to like the previous chapter, going, well, you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped. And, and I know from my experience, I know how much I've gotten out of the fact that I've been low in the past. I feel like I've probably been about as low as I could go without something terrible happening.
Mm.
It's really terrible happening. And I'm grateful for that, in that sense of without that, we wouldn't be here having this conversation. I wouldn't be capable of living the life I live now, which is, still, bereft of meaning and troublesome. But it's certainly, in many respects, much better than it was before I had the problems I had. You know what I mean? So,
do you see your life as bereft of meaning and troublesome?
Oh, yeah, of course I do. Like everyone does at some point during the day or week.
Some people don't.
Okay. I imagine that some people don't. Like, for example, my sister and I were talking last week about my brother and his wife and their family and just how, they got three kids, second child's just started school, third child's 3.5, 4, he's going to start school. She's gone back to work, established in the workforce again. They bought a house 1.5 years ago, so their mortgage debt's about as high as it's ever going to be. They're really at about the most stressful time their life is ever going to be.
Yeah.
Probably. Because of, financial obligations and then just transitioning children through big stages of their lives and then, work and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember what it was like when I was a teenager and mum and dad were in that stage. I mean, they were around about the same age when I was a teenager. And, they were grumpy.
Mm.
Our family was not lovely all the time. Our family was lovely often. At patches during the day. After dinner, sit on the couch, watch Friends or whatever. We often had, moments of this is... we all love each other and we get along really, really, really well. And the rest of the time it was fucking mayhem.
Yeah, right.
And it was hard. And they were clearly, my dad were really clearly stressed and didn't have the tools to do anything but shout and, be grumpy. And anyone who meets my parents now was like, they would never like that. Yeah. Of course. if you meet my brother and his wife at a time when they're not stressed, in the moment where they're quite comfortable, you wouldn't believe that they could be having a tough time.
Yeah.
And so interestingly about that is, oh, perhaps they don't feel, like I've just said, like bereft of meaning, because their life all day, every day, their waking hours, they've got shit to do. Their life's full of meaning. Right? Doesn't mean that it's happy meaning, like, sure. But it's like, oh, I've got to get this kid here to do this thing and there, I've got to do this report and, you know, measure this thing up for that and, you know. So maybe you're right, like not everyone feels that way already, but people with a bit of time on their hands. And no, not all day, every day, but enough to go, oh man, got to make some changes.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes you go, that's enough, decided, I have to. Am I gonna? I don't know, maybe we'll just read another chapter.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll find the answer in chapter 5.
Bereft is a horrible word, Dom.
Well, no, but that, I mean, that's a real, that's an accurate use of, I don't know,
yeah, of really.
It when you're feeling how, when you're feeling what you're feeling in the moment, that's how you feel.
Sure. Yeah. How often does that happen?
I don't know. It's hard to remember.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that.
But it's, and come, you know, back to
I'm serious.
Okay, yeah. But it's definitely, I think, well, not definitely, but I believe it is the, it's the byproduct of understanding your potential to swing.
Sure.
To swing either way from, you know, like, you can be euphoric and you can be life can be bereft of meaning, but the reality is, in that pendulum swing, most of the time you're somewhere in the middle, right? Which, so, you know, no, you're not often down there, you're not often up there, but, you know, most of the time you, because you're, like, the chapter, you're always transitioning, you're always working towards something else, and sometimes...
I don't like the pendulum analogy, by the way, because a pendulum by its nature does this the whole time. So you're actually only at any given point for exactly the same amount of time.
Yeah, that's true. But most of the time, you're not the worst, and most of the time, you're not the best. Most of the time, you're travelling in between, and that's how it is.
Mm.
Surely that's how life is.
Yeah, okay. Would there be some sort of exponential curve on your pendulum? So the middle part is longer than the two ends.
The middle part is longer than the two ends.
No, it's not. Yeah, every point is the same amount, and you're progressively getting towards bereft of meaning the whole time.
If this is as bad as it gets,
yes,
and this is as good as it gets, you're only ever as bad or as good as it gets.
I know. For a
micro moment.
Mm.
And you're always somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's better to be somewhere in between than always there. I mean, like, you know, like, what
if it slowed down a lot towards the
middle? What you don't want it to be is, like, you know, to have a grumpy asshole uncle, right? And you're on the swing, right? You're the pendulum point, and your shitty uncle grabs like this, and so you're like at the park. You think you're gonna have a good time, but the guy's like holding on, and you're like about to face plant, thinking you're gonna fall off the swing. And then he lets you go, and then you're like, oh, cool. And he's like, and then you spend most of the, you don't want to be like that.
No.
You want to be swinging.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that's why kids say, hey, push me on the swing. Don't hold it up here the whole time. It's getting the shit out of me.
There's a lot more to this chapter.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Come on, man.
I did write down a few things that I liked about it. As in, I liked to... so there's a point, it talks about seeing,
mm-hmm,
and focusing,
mm,
and I won't get much into that, but I like that. We cannot navigate without...
Just that you see what you focus on.
Yeah, yeah. We cannot navigate without something to aim at, and while we're in this world, we must always navigate.
Mm.
Yep. So we can see things that aren't there as well, so we have an imagination that, you know, can extrapolate from what we're aiming at, and then everything around it, and that's a tricky thing to deal with. Yeah. If you want to know what you believe in, observe how you act, not how you think.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Was that him?
Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
So a lot of things you're like, oh, and there's that point is that does that mean that what we see is dependent on our religious beliefs? Yes. And what we don't see as well. You might object, but I'm an atheist. No, okay. You're not. You're simply not an atheist in your actions. And it's your actions that are most accurately reflect your deepest beliefs. And those are implicit, embedded in your being underneath your conscious apprehensions. And, God, I can't even say that word. And your surface level knowledge. So you can only find out what you believe rather than what you think you believe by watching how you act. You simply don't know what you believe before that. You are too complex to understand yourself.
Yeah, right. So pay attention to your actions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, make sure you're actually aware of what it is that you're doing, what you're saying, how you behave.
Yeah. 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 That's back to that analysis thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And that we spend a lot of our time focusing on how we think we are rather than how we actually are.
That's true.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. It's not bad.
Hey. How do you break?
Do you, buddy?
I had a week.
Okay. It's good. Yeah. One weekend.
Yeah.
It was.
True. I might have a Ferrero Rocher.
I might have one with you.
Excellent. Hey, see you next time, podcast dudes. That's listeners and watchers.
Aye.
All right. Farewell.